The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Ngā kiriro o te motu rārau mai kia on the rag. He konei ipurangi mō ngā manawahine. Citizens of the Nation, welcome to On the Rag, a podcast for and about the mana of women. I'm croaking up a storm, but it's okay. My name is Alex Vocal Casey. Fry. Joined here for a very special episode by Michelle Acourt.
Hello.
Leonie Hayden.
Morena.
And we have a very special guest today, Mava Shali.
Salaam alaikum.
She's here. She's here. Now, you are a journalist.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
A writer.
Yes.
A producer for the project.
Yes. An associate and producer.
Associate producer.
Yes, very important. Okay.
Not executive.
No.
Is it less money?
So love you, John Bridges.
You're the boss at the project. No. So you're in charge of the project?
The whole thing was her idea.
Who invented the project?
And you're also self-described a sassy Muslim woman, a motor mouth,
yes.
And you claim that coffee is addicted to you.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I'm sorry.
Coffee's getting help.
Sorry we only got you one coffee. We should have lined them up.
No, that's all right.
Should I have an IV?
And somehow
IV.
I got the big one. I can give you some
That's absolutely fine. Okay. I'm still going through this, but IV later on.
Okay.
So we are here, as always, to talk about the previous month in New Zealand and women's issues.
It's huge.
I hate it when we make this podcast sound as dry as the people who don't listen to it think that it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
welcome to an hour of
hour.
Us talking about our ovaries.
Whether we're a bit clammy in the clunge.
Oh, my God.
Well, it is
Michelle.
I've taken it to the race already.
Two minutes in.
Took it round the flat.
I usually wait later than that.
It usually takes a lot longer for her to pull out the C word.
Before
it's
we
early.
Get more clunge chat ZB, we've got special thanks to the Women's Bookshop. They're having a massive sale on at the moment.
Woo!
Stock take, fire sale, everything must go. If you're in Auckland, check them out on Ponsonby Road or www.thewomensbookshop.co.nz. We've got two giveaways this month. We've got the Top Twins Top Country Culinary Journey through New Zealand with the Top Twins. Now this, I mean, what do you reckon about this?
That is a good looking book.
It's good.
What's your thoughts?
I trust their cooking for some reason.
Yeah. They look like people that know how to cut up a whole cow.
Yeah. Nose to tail, use
and
the whole thing.
And then put on a hell of a barbecue for 100 of their closest friends.
Yeah.
So if that interests you, we've got that. We've also got But I Changed All That, a little book of the first New Zealand woman, the pioneers. There's Janet Frame, there's, it might be a spoiler. There's someone that's going to feature in our new web series.
Ooh.
Aotearoa's Lost Sporting Legends.
Mm. Cool.
Who I won't blow in case the executive producer of the project scoops us.
Why?
Listen in, John Bridges.
So if you want to win those, head to our Facebook page, facebook.com/ontherag. We've also got our private Facebook group, On The Rag 24/7, of which you joined just
last
yesterday.
Night. Yes, I did.
I saw you. What did you think? Did you take a look around?
I did. And there was a piece on it that I really enjoyed. It was from someone had commented on a piece on the New York Times. They talked about Jacinda Ardern's leadership.
Oh, yeah.
It was a bit complicated for me, that comment, about how it shouldn't have been that straightforward about her being being a woman and leading us through this time. But for me, I looked at it and I was like, but it is that straightforward. She is a woman. She's a mum and she did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing a lie.
It's a good page, and you could actually spend your whole life just reading on that page. You might have to give up your job or get promoted to the level where, you know, they don't actually do anything. is the ideal, I think.
But that ain't going to happen at the project. Everyone's always doing something, even Jeremy Corbett.
Become the Scopes. He's not on Dancing with the Stars, right? That was an April Fool's
That was an April Fool's thing. I was so disappointed.
Good one. That was believable.
It was too plausible.
That's, you know, shout out to the graphics team. Yeah. They are so good.
Oh, that wasn't even his body?
No, just his head. Oh, no, that's not his body. Oh, no.
I mean, he's lovely.
He's lovely. We've known each other for a long time, but no.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, we're going to do things a little bit differently this month. Obviously, looking back at, it's April now, but we're looking back at March, and there was probably just one news event that defined that month. It's been a couple of weeks now, but it feels kind of bizarre to, I mean, not move on, but, you know, the news cycle moves on, and I just thought we haven't really had time to kind of talk about it.
Yeah.
So how are we doing? How are we doing?
It's the world does feel slightly different for me, for people like us, I guess, maybe. You know, we thought that this wouldn't happen here. I don't know why we thought it wouldn't happen. I think we thought that nobody knew where New Zealand was.
I think we just think nothing happens here ever.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why the person who committed the atrocity chose it to happen here. So there's that. But yeah, I mean, it's been wonderful as well as terrible, right?
It is terrible. But I think New Zealand's been remarkable in the 2 weeks and some days that we have had, in the way that we have moved on. And yes, move on is a bit of a grotesque term, and yes, all of that. But we have, maybe, in my opinion, past that first stage of grief, and we're now at a crossroads where we could do something about it. And that, and to me, I'll measure that by a certain number of things, or not do anything about it, which I don't think is an option. But it is important to mention that we've made spectacular progress, and we wouldn't have been able to do it without the women in this country. So, of course, the leadership of Jacinda Ardern. I mean, everyone's seen that picture that was projected onto the bridge. You know, you don't fake that kind of hug. You don't fake that kind of love and aroha that you have for someone. Then it's, you know, the victims' families, and that those mothers, daughters, wives, sisters, friends who showed this immense amount of courage and sort of saying, well, it's happened. We're going to grieve for it, but we're not going to still at the same time mourn them, because they've literally taken bullets, but it's not going to be for no reason. So that's women. And then, of course, non-Muslim women who just chose to wear the, well, despite criticism, wear the headscarf, or not wear the headscarf, but at least come out. So I think women have come out in their droves, and they've really led us through this crisis, and which is why we've sort of in some way been graceful through this. Had it not been for women, we wouldn't be talking about it this way. There are certainly a lot of male leaders around the world making some sort of weird calls, and they're looking like Muppets. You know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah. Bit of a turkey.
It's true, though, that we've sort of reacted with compassion as a country, and that is because of the leader that we've got, whereas these things happen in other countries, and it's this big dick-swinging competition.
Yes.
Did like you fight fire with fire, and it's all super masked and aggressive, and it's really nice to be able to be like a little example to the world of how not to do that.
Kindness and gentleness. Also, I'm not the only person, I think, who every now and then when I've been hearing Jacinda speak, I've flipped it in my head and imagined Simon Bridges having a chat. and then I stop doing that because it makes me feel unwell.
Don't do that to her.
No, that's
she doesn't
really
deserve
mad.
That.
No. But it just shows you how lucky we are to have that person with that mana.
And on a positive note, you know, any leader, any New Zealand leader, whether male or female, if they went through this, they would have had some level of aroha, whether it was Simon Bridges or whoever it was.
Yeah. But God, you're so much nicer than I am. You're lovely. It's very kind.
Well. Oh, okay. Tell that to my mom. Who thinks I'm a horrible person for hurting her feelings every morning.
That's what mothers are for.
Yeah. Thanks, Michelle. But no, what I'm saying is what really stands out to me is that it's a woman. And a mother at that. And that really makes a difference. And you know, so it shouldn't be wished upon any leader, but having a woman is the most amazing thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Have you found, like you say, this is sort of the moving through this has been led by women, and especially women in the Muslim community. Mm-hmm. But that new visibility on the Muslim community that wasn't there before, people who don't know enough about Islam are all like, but aren't you all oppressed? Like, what's that been like, sort of?
Frustrating.
Yeah.
Very, very frustrating.
Are people, like, frank with you about their sort of, their questions?
They're frank about the questions, like, why do you do it? How do you do it? But they never ask, are you forced into doing it? I mean, there's obviously a nicer way of asking, like, do you feel forced into doing this? I don't know whether that's political correctness, why people wouldn't want to ask, but certainly all the women I have known don't do it out of oppression.
Yeah.
I have known women, like myself, I did it for a long period of time and then I gave it up and there was no judgment around that. And then I started doing it again and there was no judgment around, like, you know, from my community around that, whether I gave it up or wore it again. And I know women like that as well, I think. But the point is that, no, we're not oppressed. And it really is hurtful when people say it's a symbol of oppression, because I do it as a symbol of identification. And I'm more than my hijab, just as you are more than your clothes and you're more than your glasses and you're more than your humor. And and you know, that sort of a thing. Like, you know, it's just... I'm more than that. I actually remember this employment situation that I was once in, and I really, really wanted that job. And the industry, believe it or not, I used to work in HR, and the industry, I was told, was a bit old school. And they would not accept the hijab. But at the same time, the recruiter said to me, but you're a very striking race. And I'm like, I'm not Arab. What do you mean by a striking race? Because Muslims aren't a race.
That's a weird sentence to make.
Yeah, you're a very striking race. So at the same time, it brings the focus to your face. And I'm like, but that's not what I want the focus to be on. Yeah. I want you to look at my CV. I want you to tell me that I can deal with people. And it was an HR job. Yeah. So isn't that what human resource professionals are supposed to do?
Yeah.
As well. So we're more than our hijab. But... if, and I hate the word solidarity, but if other people want to, because it's been used so much, but if other people want to put it on, please don't think it's a symbol of oppression, because I'm not oppressed. Trust me, I'm not. Yeah. I'm not.
I'm not getting that vibe at all.
No,
I'm
not getting that up.
No. I might have been the oppressor, but.
Can I ask you, when you stopped wearing the hijab for a while, what motivated you to do that, and why did you start to wear it again?
Okay, that's, nobody's ever asked me that question. So thanks, Michelle. Thank you, spinoff. because I didn't feel like I fitted in. So I stopped wearing it. And I'll be very honest, I did not feel like I fitted in. I wanted to be normal. But then what's normal? Yeah. Like, you know, in New Zealand, there's all sorts of colors and races. And as in our prime minister puts it, hundreds of different ethnicities. So... you know, then I stopped doing it, and I think about a year and a half that I didn't do it. But then I was like, well, this has always been my identity. So why should I give it up to be like everyone else?
Yeah,
that's cool.
You wrote that amazing piece for the spin-off, actually.
Yes.
Wink, wink. I remember being on the phone to you and you were just like, I'd love to write about hijab. I want to talk about Muslim Bluetooth.
Yes.
I feel like it's a great opportunity for you to talk about that right now.
Great. Well, it wasn't, I was disappointed to learn that wasn't my invention. I thought it was, but it's not. Like, women in Australia doing it. There was someone in Minnesota who did it, and the police had to say, well, it's completely legal because you're not touching the phone. And,
you know, was driving.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, you can drive with it. So, in that spinoff piece, I do mention my beautiful colleague Callum. Love you, Callum, friend. Anyway, he tried to do it with a tea towel because it's not as tight. So yeah, so the hijab has its you know, its good points, and that means you can stick your phone tuck your phone in.
Yeah. Also, we've discussed this bad hair day.
Bad hair days. Mm-hmm. Okay, cannot tell you the number of days I've had greasy hair under my hijab. It's not the reason I do it, but it is great. You can have a bad hijab day, though.
Can you? Yeah, any days when you just can't tie it right?
You can't tie it. There's no winning for women, eh? So, so some days, you know, you can't find the right matching hijab, or if you, God forbid, the day you lose a safety pin. You cannot lose safety pins. A problem and a half. So,
What do you use instead?
you don't use anything. Then you have to tie it. And then you have to be graceful and stuff, which I can't be.
So. You also mentioned earlier that it came in handy when you tried to dye your hair blonde.
Oh, yes. There was a time when I bleached my hair. And for those of you, you know, who don't know what I look like, I've got olive skin. So,
It's not an easy thing for us darker-skinned women to do.
No. So I went
congratulations.
And I'm not talking blonde. I'm talking like blonde, like platinum blonde.
Platinum blonde.
Yeah. Like, is it Eminem who's got that sort of...
Yeah.
So I went Eminem. But it wasn't good. It was not good. And my people at home had to endure it. Like, my family had to endure it. Well, actually, no, they didn't have to endure it because I was a butt of all jokes. So, no, seriously,
I
was.
Loving it.
Yeah, they were like, you know, calling me Britney Spears. And it wasn't, you know...
Yeah, I like that your reference was Eminem.
Yeah, they're calling me all sorts of things. My brother was just like, oh my God. And then I got called a Pakistani blonde and all sorts of things. But yes, the hijab came in handy because no matter what my color, hair color is, I will have a hijab on and you will not be able to tease me.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask you, one of the things that, you know, for somebody who just had a day of wearing a hijab, you feel it's quite a confronting thing because you know that everybody can see it, right?
Yeah.
So what is that like on a daily basis for you?
So right after the attacks, I had these compassionate smiles, which was all right, which was not bad to have, because we were all hurting. But on a daily basis, yes, I do get stares. Mm. I like, you know, so someone staring at you, you know, when someone's staring at you, you look. I remember this incident when I turned around and looked at someone else who was staring at me, and they were like, "What are you looking at?" And that was weird because you'd just been looking at me.
Yeah. You stared at us.
Exactly. That's exactly what I wanted to say. But she was, she was kind of big and scary. So I didn't. So I looked away. But I also know of times, this one time I was told to go back home. And I was like, okay, I'll go to Henderson now.
Yeah. I mean, I need to get home at some point.
Sure. So just call me an Uber. I'll go to Henderson now. On that note, this brings us to an important point as well. Just a month before the actual shootings, February 14th, 2019, three Muslim women wearing the hijab in Dunedin were actually attacked by skinheads. This was reported by the Otago Daily Times. I've had a friend, a very, very dear friend, who was spat on because of wearing the hijab, and someone tried to pull her hijab off. And it's happened. I mean, there was this girl in Hendley, Mepara Khan, I think her name was, who, you know, her hijab was pulled off. So that's very common for that to happen. But at the same time, it's not scary to wear it because you're like, well, this is what I'm doing and this is who I am. So you can't take that away from me.
The interesting thing about what you've just said, though, is that Muslim women have been really aware of the attitude towards them, the aggression, the growing aggression, it seems.
Yes.
And nobody listened.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I think the spin-off ran a piece by Anjum Rahman.
Yeah.
But I've heard that, we've all heard that, I've actually, a very senior person in the then national government, I remember asking him, he came for a hui at a mosque, and I remember asking him, I said, I fear for us. And he said, you've got nothing to be scared of. I've said that. I know that there's a very prominent Muslim woman leader in Hamilton. And she said in 2015, those sort of attacks had been on the rise. But what worries me the most is this, you know, so if you look at the last decade or so, there's three things that stood out to me. There was this one professor, and I think he's a media commentator as well now. He was at the University of Auckland, and a Muslim head covering student asked him for an essay extension. And he said, you're playing on the Western guilt, or some such words. Her father had died, and she had asked for an extension for that reason. So we're talking an academic.
Mm.
I'm not going to name names here. Then there was another professor just about 1 or 2 years ago who forced a Muslim woman to shake hands with him. And he was sacked for it. Then there's another professor who said, well, Muslims are not very, I don't want to misquote him, but basically he questions the employability of Muslims because they have to pray five times a day. And those prayers, I can tell you, take 5 minutes of your time, and my colleagues at the project have never known when I've gone out to pray. Yeah. They've never known when I've fasted. I mean, Michelle is a colleague, and I don't know if you've noticed. I don't announce it. I just go do my thing and come back. And breaks are an important part of the New Zealand work culture, or it should be anyway. Mm. So this guy actually said, well, then he questioned the employability. What worries me is whether this is us, whether this isn't us, if the universities and people were supposed to be churning out our best from these tertiary, institutions. Yeah. And if this is what the teachers there are doing, this is what the senior lecturers there are doing, what does that say about us? Yeah. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and if it's like that at those kind of supposedly educated professional levels, what's happening further down?
But in saying that, I mean, I must acknowledge our school teachers, our primary school teachers, beautiful people. When I was this intern. At the Western Leader in Auckland. Shout out, Western Leader. They sent me to a school. They sent me to a primary school. And I learned one of my life's most important lessons through a young 6-7-year-old girl. So we interviewed her. It was about free fruit for kids or whatever. I interviewed her, and this beautiful girl from, I think, her cultural background was from the islands or something. And she said to me, Miss Ali, what's your cultural background? And I thought it was such a beautiful question to ask instead of saying, where are you from? Because that's confronting.
So
I learned, I never ask where you're from. I always go, what's your cultural background? Yeah. Not even your ethnic background, your cultural background. Because culture is beautiful.
That's what I ask. But it took me 30 years to learn to ask it that way.
Yeah, you're a 6-year-old, man.
Yeah.
So there you go. So we are starting right. Maybe those teachers are starting right. But when it gets to whatever, I don't know if I can make it. A gross generalization like that, but at the same time, we've got factors that are working for us as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that real high level institutionalized racism and prejudice, I think I quite often just make myself feel better by saying they'll be dead soon.
Yeah, it does feel like a waiting game.
It's a waiting game. You just gotta wait it out, but at the same time, you also have to ensure
that they're not passing it on.
That they're not passing it on. That the younger generations are smarter. That they're more open minded. Mm. But like you were saying about the sort of the employability thing, that's something we've talked about here before about sort of the rigidity of what is seen as the 9-to-5, 40-hour working week in terms of that's the only way it's done, which historically, that's excluded a lot of women from the workforce. Mm. And it genuinely had never occurred to me that it was also doing that to other cultures.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. And it also occurs to me that taking 5 minutes five times a day to be mindful is what we should all be doing.
We should all be doing that anyway. Yeah. I totally agree.
And also, I'm like, what about the smokers?
Yeah.
They have 5 minutes five times a day.
Yeah. For sure. I think probably mindfulness is
it's probably better for you.
Culture smokers go out and then they spend those 5 minutes reflecting on something.
You
don't know what they're doing. That's why you never smoke.
I sit in the toilet for 5 minutes, you know?
Hiding from the boss.
Just on your phone.
Can we talk about the feminism within the Muslim world? Because it seems to me that it's rife. That's what I'm saying.
Yep. Oh, good. Well, that's the way I see it too.
Yeah.
I don't think Islam and feminism are mutually exclusive, but I'm not at the same time going to deny that there have been cultural influences that have suppressed women. But you cannot confuse those sort of tribal values with what Islam actually is. Mm. We've got to remember, so this is a religion 1400 years ago. It brought in the right for women to vote. So New Zealand just said that, and it makes me a very proud Kiwi to say that, because we brought in, you know, we were the first to say, hey, women, you're people, you can vote. So Islam brought that. It was also a time when women did not have the right to property. And women were given the right to inherit property and not be property. Women have been orators in Islam. Women have been educators in Islam. And it's a huge misconception that women, Muslim women, are not allowed to be educated, which is absolutely incorrect. I mean, you've got the examples. So again, do not confuse tribal values with Islamic values. You've got people like Malala Yousafzai, who's an absolute advocate for women's education. You've got people like, I mean, I come from Pakistan, and you've got someone like Benazir Bhutto, who was the first Muslim prime minister, and she was the first prime minister to be pregnant in office, and she went right back to work the day after she gave birth. Yeah. I mean, and yeah, I know, she was real cool. And it was in Pakistan, my father was one of the people responsible for her security. He was in the police. And the thing was, everyone wanted a piece of her. Someone wanted to push her and for her to lose the baby, and other people wanted to just get a glimpse of the daughter of, you know, Bhutto, so who was such a, you know, a very weird leader in Pakistan. And she's the one who restored democracy in Pakistan, and that's a big deal. We've got Bangladesh. Since 1991, they've only had female leaders. So feminism and Islam are not mutually exclusive. It can exist, but that does not mean that there are certain tribal practices that we can do away with. So, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think one of the questions that we sent through to you that seemed like far too big a subject for here and now, but I guess I'm guessing one of the common misconceptions, like you say, someone mistook you for being Arab earlier or whatever, a job interview. So I'm assuming your sort of identity as a Muslim changes country to country, right? Because your the politics change, the laws change, the culture changes.
Absolutely.
So do you find that there are sort of Muslim women in other countries that you sort of feel for, that you think that maybe Muslim women from that are from other countries can help out? Is there that sort of feminist solidarity across borders?
Well, the thing is, well, feminism in certain countries is born out of that oppression. Yeah. So we see a lot of women in Saudi Arabia, for example, getting up and asking for rights. Like, for example, I do not understand why women are not, were not allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. And those women have stood up and they have asked for their rights. You know, they can do it. Or like in Afghanistan, so the whole idea of that shuttlecock burqa is a very cultural thing. You will not see it in a lot of other parts of the world.
Right.
You know? So they've stood up and they've said, well, this is how I want to cover myself. And they still, by the way, they still want to cover themselves, just not in that prescribed way. I don't think anyone wants to be pushed. So great feminism is also born out of countries where we perceive that there's a lot of oppression. And I don't know. I mean, this is a thing that could launch 1,000 PhDs as well, because I think they're largely the Western misunderstanding around the parda, or the sort of the close quarters, has come from the times of colonization, when people, colonizers, went into these countries and they saw the sort of the so the only women that they saw were the sort of the notch girls or the dancing girls, and these were the women who were exposed, who were by those Western people sort of were thought of to be of loose character, and the women of the noble sort of descent were in their own quarters. But and so that the concept of the harem came about. So there's a lot of that colonization has brought about a lot of that misunderstanding of
Western
what
Western gaze.
Yeah, the Western gaze, exactly. But at the same time, there was a woman, I forget her name, who went, a Western woman who went, and she said, when I go to the Middle East, and this is the time, maybe it was Egypt, she went and she was like, the beauty of these Muslim women is that when they go out all covered, you can't tell who is a poor woman and who's a rich woman, because they're all covered. They all look the same. So there's a lot of misunderstanding around it, that, you know, somehow Muslim women do not have a voice because they're covered, or like I said, in the colonial times, they looked at it and they went like, oh, they're inside, in the in these inside quarters. And so they don't have a voice. That is incorrect. We do have a voice. Yeah. You can hear it right now. So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What about, so we're kind of in this moment right now. How do we keep it going? How do we keep supporting Muslim communities, especially women?
Or do you even need our support?
Do you need it?
That's a very good question. I was gonna, you know, that it talks to both of your questions. I think, yes, continue to support Muslim communities, but don't do it at the cost of ignoring the Sikh community or the Hindu community or the Māori or the or the Chinese. I mean, the Asian communities have really been, really had a tough time in this country. They've had a horrible time in New Zealand. And it hurts me to say that there's a person in power right now who really, really said, had very bad things to say about Asian communities. So support them at the same time, please. It's not kid gloves around Muslims now. I mean, please, we're all under attack, and at the same time, yes, you're talking about supporting Muslim communities, but it was an attack on all of us. So take time for yourselves as well, to care for yourselves as well, because our country was affected by it, not just a Muslim place of worship. Mm. It existed in New Zealand. So please go ahead. If there's a Sikh temple near you, go and visit it. If there's a Hindu temple, go there. There's so many beautiful things. Like at the Sikh temple, they have this thing called a langar, which is a free meal cooked by volunteers. It's beautiful. Go and have that. Mm-hmm. Go to the Hindu temple and then they present food to the deities. Go and try one of those sweets. Go to a Buddhist temple. Go to a synagogue. Take care of all the communities, not just the Muslim community at this point.
And it's okay just to turn up, isn't it?
Well, for a mosque,
yeah,
it's open at certain times.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, turn up.
But ask them. Non-Muslims are welcome.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like a mirai. So just know to take your shoes off.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just to wrap it up, when I first moved to New Zealand in the 2000s, early 2009 it was. Anyway, I loved how the Māori were welcoming. And, you know, you kind of go with the flow. You see everyone taking their shoes off before they go into the whare. And you do that sort of thing. And you learn that kia ora is not kia ora. It's kia ora. So that sort of thing. But you're sort of steered through it. So just watch the cues. Yeah. Mm.
That's what rules are for. So I love about that sort of, about tikanga, but from every culture. I don't know what the word is in English, but. Yeah. There's a nice set of rules to follow, and it keeps everyone safe and welcome.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're about finding a way in rather than a way of keeping you out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of kia ora, I would like to nominate Mahvash Ali as our kia ora queenie of the month.
Kia ora.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on this podcast. Please come back.
Yeah,
take my seat. Take the mic.
I would love to.
It's been lovely to have you here, and you'll be hanging out on the Rag page as well. So,
of course, I'm lurking.
Get commenting. I lurk forever.
Like lurking.
As a journalist, Facebook is a great way for me to stalk people.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm doing my job.
That's true. You've got to be careful on our page, though. Yes. We'll tell you about it off mic.
Yes, yeah. Chatham House rules. We'll explain.
Please don't steal any story ideas from On the Rag 2017.
Well, the project is great like that. Yeah. We only move the stories forward.
Yeah, we love it. We love the project. We loved having you on here today.
Yeah, thank you.
Wonderful. Kia ora, yeah. Everybody.
And that was a podcast. We did that thing where we decided to finish, then we're like, oh, we should do a proper outro. So we're back. Sorry, guys. We're going to keep it a little bit shorter this month. We just thought, you know.
It was really nice to just talk about the one thing that's on everybody's mind.
From the important voice on it. So, we'll be back same time next month. Please go and shop at the Women's Bookshop. I can't stress that enough, honestly.
It's a sale. It's the beginning of the new financial year as well. So just start it right and spend all your money.
That's right.
There.
You're back to zero with your spending.
Yeah.
So it's like you've never spent any money ever before in your life.
Start fresh. Thank you for them.
Go do it.
Thank you for them. Thank you to them. Thank you to Tina.
Thanks, Tina.
Yay, Tina.
Thank you, Michelle, Leone, and Marv, who's now left us. But I wish she was still here.
Yeah. She's still here in spirit,
maybe
I feel.
She'll be back.
Yeah.
She'll be back. We will force her to come back.
Mm.
And go watch our show if you haven't watched it already.
Yes, go on and watch episode one again.
On YouTube. It's doing good numbers.
Oh, good.
That's nice.
It's nearly got to 2,000 views.
I liked it.
Watched it a couple of times. Okay, we're rambling now. Goodbye.
Bye.
Kia kite.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.